emotion is there. How can we, you know, being a grasta people, how can we, you know, advance in Krishna consciousness in being grasta to you? Can you?
Okay. Sure. Okay. This is October 21st, 2007 in Dubai, meeting with ladies.
So your question about karma, are you asking how do we deal with suffering?
Yeah. No, deal with suffering is okay, but about the karma, which years we suffer with that, with janma, like that.
I don't really understand your question.
About the karma only, I want to know something about that. Sufferings and karmas, both.
What exactly do you want to know? That's a very big topic.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm not sure what area you're asking. Could you be more clear with your question?
No, I want to know about the suffer. Suppose we don't do any bad work and all, still in this life we have to suffer this and that and that.
Do you want to know why you're suffering?
Yeah.
I think I understand you, but I'm not sure if I understand you. Do you want to know why we're suffering even though in this life we're doing good work?
Yeah.
Mm. Is that the question?
Yeah, you can explain that.
Well, that's because we did bad work in the last life. That is not hard to understand.
Yeah.
Also, we are probably doing more bad work than we would like to admit. Just like, so not that long ago, I was visiting. I was in some house, and the bathroom was very dirty. Very dirty, very, very bad smell, very dirty. I mean, very bad. So I was suffering. I was actually suffering. Even to just go in the bathroom to wash my hand, I felt like I was choking from the smell was so bad. So you may say, well, why was I suffering? Do you understand? So So you could say that I was suffering because the people who stayed there were not considerate. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
They were being inconsiderate or they were being irresponsible.
Yeah.
So they were being irresponsible or they were being inconsiderate. So I might think, well, I'm very considerate and I'm very responsible. Now, I may be responsible to clean my bathroom. So in that way, I may be responsible. But then I have to ask, am I ever irresponsible? Or am I ever inconsiderate? So just like in Bahrain, there was a ladies' program supposed to start at a certain time. And people came to get me, and they came on time, and I was finishing some work. So they waited for like 20 minutes. And I knew that the program was scheduled for a certain time, but I was thinking, okay, I want to get my work done. So I got there half an hour late, maybe 40 minutes late. So I was being inconsiderate of those people. Now, usually people are late, but in that case, everybody was on time.
See, yeah.
And not only was everyone on time, but they had figured that it would be a one-hour program. So at the end of an hour, they didn't have their own transport. So after 1 hour, they had a van that was transporting all of them. So after an hour, they had to leave, but it was actually only half an hour because I came late. So that means because I was inconsiderate, I inconvenienced about 15 people. And I knew I was being late. It wasn't just some accident. People were waiting, and I said, I'll finish what I'm doing. It won't be that long.
Yeah.
So my point is, I'm upset when somebody's inconsiderate to me. But then I have to ask, am I ever inconsiderate? So then when I saw that, I felt bad. I felt really bad. I thought, oh, I didn't know everybody would come on time.
Yeah.
I mean, somehow they said, we'll start at 10:30, it will go 10:30 to 11. But usually it doesn't really mean that. So I was thinking, you know, that's my excuse. I thought, well, what doesn't that going to mean that? So So my point is that when we are suffering, we should think, do I ever do anything like this? Maybe it's not in the same form. I personally become convinced that whatever we're getting, we're giving. That anything we are getting, we are giving. Absolutely. The problem is that we think we're very nice people. And we don't believe that I am giving what I'm getting. We just don't believe it. So we think law of karma sounds nice for you and you, but it doesn't sound nice for me because I'm a good person. But one of the things that happens, if you want to know the truth,
yeah,
if you really want to know the truth, Krishna will show you that we're not such good people. Now, if you're really chanting with attention and you really ask, he'll show you we're not good. I mean, we're good and we're not good both. We're a soul, so as a soul, we're all good. As a soul, we're... Radhanath Maharaj was speaking about the first verse of the Shikshastika, and he was talking about Chaito Darpana Marjanam, seeing yourself. And he was saying how that Krishna says that with just one spark of himself, he's maintaining the whole creation. So we're also a spark of him. So Maharaj was saying that this means that each of us as a soul is more glorious than the whole creation of matter. How beautiful and glorious and powerful each one of us is. And we're actually all good. But we have deliberately become dirty. Deliberately. Purposely become dirty. So the way we're behaving now is not at all good. Actually, for a conditioned soul, the motives are all terrible. A materialistic person thinks, my motives are good, but sometimes I make a mistake. But as you advance in spiritual life, you'll see, sometimes I do something right, but my motives are all bad. And when we first start in Krishna consciousness, we think that we're a very wonderful person. And as you're chanting, Krishna will start, if you're chanting sincerely, and you're trying to avoid offenses, Krishna will start showing you that actually we're not very good people. Our reasons for doing things are terrible. Even when we do nice things, what's motivating us to do them is lust, envy, greed, anger. It's quite nasty. Pride, desires for fame, desires for honor, desires for wealth. This is what's going on in our heart. And so even the nice things we do are all nasty, actually. So when you start seeing that, then you no longer wonder at why we're suffering. Because what we're doing is not nice. And what we're getting back, what we're doing. There was one famous Christian who said, who believed in karma. He said, karma is meeting yourself. It's like a mirror. So that doesn't mean that we become depressed. So if you don't see that about yourself, if you keep chanting, you will. I mean, I'll warn you that if you're thinking, you know, no, I'm a very good person, I'm not selfish, I'm not envious, I'm not lusty, and you keep chanting, you will see those things. And if you're not willing to see those things, what I see happens with people, either they stop chanting or they start chanting just mechanically. Because if you're chanting with attention, you will see those things. You will see how the dirty state of your heart. So that's necessary. Just like this house is very clean. So when you clean the house, don't you have to see the dirt? How can you clean if you're blind? Can you clean a house with your eyes closed? Is that possible? Don't you have to see where there's dirt? And if you want to clean house, then you should be happy when you find the dirt. Not depressed. So our heart is a very dirty house. We haven't cleaned it for millions of years. So imagine a beautiful, beautiful house. The walls are made of jewels and gold, but it hasn't been cleaned for 200 years. So that is the state of our heart. It's beautiful, but it hasn't been clean for 200 years. And when you're chanting, Krishna, Gyanadi, Pena, Bhashvati, turns on the light, and you'll see the difference. And then you will not wonder, why am I suffering? It will not be a mystery anymore. You'll see. You know, actually, I'm suffering much less than I deserve because my dealings are not good. But then you clean. You don't just sit there and cry, oh, I'm so fallen, oh, I'm so fallen. But you clean. Actually, we can't clean. Krishna cleans. But we have to give him permission to clean. Just like even if you have a servant, you have to ask them to come in, you have to give them permission to clean. And maybe they don't, usually they don't clean everything every day, right? So you or you invite a friend over to clean, help you clean. You have some closet. You know, here it's not like that. But let's say that you were living in your family house, grandfather, father, and now you're living in the same house. So people have lived in that house for hundreds of years. And then you find there's one room or one closet, people have just been throwing things. And you say, now I want to clean this out. So you invite a good friend, and you say, help me clean. So then they'll pick up something, you know. They'll say, oh, look at this. It's all rotten and moldy. And you say, oh, I like it. It's from my grandmother. So you have to give them permission to throw it out. So as we see the dirt, we have to give Krishna permission to clean it. Otherwise, he will not clean it. But I do guarantee you that whatever we are suffering, it is definitely either because we deserve it or because Krishna feels that this will be best for us to advance. And you can say, well, isn't that cruel? And that answer is no. Just like a teacher will see that in order for children to learn their mathematics, they have to sit and work. So for the children, working is suffering. They're thinking that doing the lessons, it's suffering. But from the teacher's point of view, they know that unless the students do those lessons, they'll not learn. So actually, it's not suffering. If the student takes it, oh, I'm doing this to learn, then it's not suffering anymore. But if they're not understanding the purpose, then they think, oh, it's suffering, it's suffering, it's suffering. So we see what the purpose is, but actually not experience it as suffering. So Krishna tells us that freedom from suffering does not mean changing the suffering, but changing how we perceive the suffering. It's how we interpret what happens that determines how we feel about it. Let's say a person goes to a restaurant and there's a lady waitress serving, and you say, I want this. She brings you the wrong thing. She brings you the wrong thing again. She's not smiling. Then she spills the ice cream on you. So at least in America, for people who are serving in a restaurant, you give them some tip. Do they do that here?
Yeah.
You pay a bill, then you also give a tip. So you may be thinking, okay, I'm not going to give this lady any tip. So you're getting prepared to pay, and someone says to you, oh, you see that lady there? You say, yes. They say, you know, 5 days ago her husband died and she has 5 young children. So then you will change your interpretation of her behavior, won't you?
Good.
You will go from being angry to being sympathetic. And instead of giving no tip, you'll give her a large tip. Because you'll understand that her behavior is not, it's not that she's nasty, she's mourning. So my point is that how we understand things depends on how we interpret them. So you can reinterpret your suffering in a different way, and it will not come to you as suffering anymore. So how many of you have children? Okay. So I discovered something in the teachings of Lord Kapila, where Prabhupada says that even a materialistic man can put his mind in such a way that he will not be disturbed by the pain of a surgical operation. So when I was pregnant with my second child, I thought, I have to learn how to do this because I don't want to go through labor again like that. I had done some breathing exercises and they helped a little bit, but I thought, you know, that was really, I felt like it was a trip to hell and back. I really, it was not pleasant. So I said, I'm not going to do that again. So during my second pregnancy, I decided, Prabhupada was talking about detaching your mind. So every day I was practicing, I would actually go into a trance and I would just meditate on Krishna. I practiced every day for many months. And then during the labor, I did that. I actually went into a trance and I meditated on the temple deities, Radha Govinda. I was meditating on the belt, on Govinda's belt, which off Govinda was very ugly and on Govinda was very beautiful. It was these big beads, huge beads. I can still see that because I spent many hours, it was a 17-hour labor, meditating on that belt. And I had no pain, absolutely none, zero, complete zero. And what was even more interesting is not only did I have zero pain, but I was able to very clearly feel what was happening in my body. What I learned is that when we're in pain, it's like when we're feeling pain or pleasure, we're not able to understand things properly. We're so wrapped up in the pain or the pleasure. But when you don't feel that pain or pleasure, your vision clears. I could feel the muscles of my body. I could feel exactly what my body was doing. They were going like this. I could feel exactly what the uterine muscles were doing. It was just fascinating. But I was like an observer. I was just like an observer. And I was super aware of what was going on, but as a detached person, and I had no pain. And then with my third child, I did the same thing. Actually, but then I was even more expert at it. Because with my second child, I was doing it through great determination, through extreme mental strength. And it was very tiring because my mind was screaming, "You can't do this, this is too hard." And I was beating my mind and saying, "Yes, you can, shut up." So I did it, but it was a struggle. So with my third child, I thought, you know, I'm going to do this a little differently. So then when I did it, was with each contraction, I decided I was going to welcome it. I thought, okay. Because I had him in the summer, not like the summer here, but bad enough. I can't imagine being pregnant in the summer here, Hare Krishna. Oh my God, you're 20, in your temperature, 10 degrees hotter than everybody else. I'd come up from the temple and I'd take off my sari and just put on like a loose dress, you know. So I was thinking, okay, each contraction is going to bring me closer to not being pregnant anymore. If I said closer to having the baby, I already knew having the baby was going to be a lot of work, so it wasn't like, I'm not a very sentimental person. I'm not very sentimental. So.
I think all of you should do that. The youngsters should practice from motherhood.
Well, I teach many ladies how to do this.
Yeah, okay.
But what I did then was I was welcoming, and as soon as, what happens with most women is as soon as the contraction starts, they become tense. They become afraid, they become tense. And they tense against the contraction, and that's what causes the pain, actually. Pain is not caused by what's going on in the body, it's caused by our reaction to it. That when you tense against it, the muscles are fighting each other, that's what causes pain. So what I did was I welcomed it. I said, "Oh, wow, another contraction. Pretty soon I won't be pregnant anymore." And not only was there no pain, but I was very relaxed. And I was joking with my husband and the midwife, even when I was 8-9 centimeters. And the midwife said to me, I don't know when you're having a contraction. She said, "You have to give me some signal." I said, okay. And that was also a 17-hour labor. Physically, it was the same. And after he was born, I said, "You know, I could do that again. Yeah, pretty funny, huh?" So I learned many things from that. Many things. But one of the things that I learned is that whether or not something is painful is our interpretation of it and our reaction to it. What my godbrother Sridhar Maharaj said, he left his body some years ago. He said, "Pain is inevitable and suffering is a choice. Pain is inevitable and suffering is a choice." So I can't say that I realize this all the time. I'm still working at it. But I know that it's true. I know it's true. I experience it. You know, sometimes it's harder than others. But we suffer because we're attached and because we're not surrendering. Basically, what I learned from labor is that when you surrender and you joyfully accept whatever Krishna gives you, there's no suffering. It's unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. When you detach yourself from the world and you joyfully accept whatever Krishna's given you, there is simply no suffering. It goes away. In the Mahabharata, there's a story of the Narayana weapon. You know that story? So the Kurus released the Narayana weapon. And Krishna said to all the Pandavas, the Pandava army, he said, "Put down your weapons and lie down." So everybody did it except Bhima. Beam is there. I'm not going to put down my weapons and lie down for anything. And he's there, standing on his chariot. And so the weapon was starting to destroy the Pandava army. And Krishna told him, get down. And then the Narayana weapon just went over. So the problem is that we don't accept. We're trying to be the controllers. When things happen that we don't like, we fight them. We wrestle with them. And we experience pain. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, yeah. I understood very much.
Okay, because I wasn't sure what your question was. You want to know how can we advance as grahasthas? What's the difference between advancing as grahasthas and advancing as not grahasthas? What are the differences? What difference does it make that you're grahasthas? Why does that matter? I'm asking you.
Yeah, I know.
You don't know. So how can I answer that question?
How would you know about this?
You asked me. How can I advance as a grahasta?
Yeah, this is my question actually to Mata.
Okay.
How can we advance more to spiritual life?
So, but how to advance in spiritual life is already given. You already know how to advance in spiritual life. Do you know?
No, I don't know so much, but you just have...
No, but in general, do you know how to advance? How do we advance in spiritual life?
By doing japa chanting and by remembering God.
Okay, how else?
Meditation.
Association of
devotees.
Okay, how else?
Taking prasad.
Taking prasad, how else?
By doing service.
Doing service,
yes.
How else?
By trying to be as earnest as we can in following the principles which...
Okay.
Are being preached.
How else?
Visiting dams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which includes temples.
Yeah.
And having a temple in your home, then you also create your home as a dam.
Yeah.
Like
putting your hands up and saying, Krishna, baby.
Okay, how else?
By having a certain level of unattachment with the Maya.
Very nice. How else? Hearing.
Yeah.
Reading the books.
Reading the
books with attention, with devotion, by hearing. So all those things you can do, whether you're a grahasta or not a grahasta. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has a book called Bhaktyaloka. Where he explains the third and fourth verse of the Nectar of Instruction. And there, for each of those items, because in the third verse, Rupa Goswami says what not to do. In the fourth verse, he says what to do. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes each of those, and he says, for a renunciate, you do it like this, and for a grahasta, you do it like this. For each of those things. So I'd suggest you get the book Bhaktiloka, and you study it. But do you have any specific questions about being a grahasta?
No, that's it. I just want to know more about, you know, scripture. How can we more advanced, you know?
How you can be more advanced is you chant, whenever you chant in the kirtan in japa,
okay.
You chant with great attention. And when Krishna shows you, what Krishna will do is he'll show you Maya, himself, and yourself. When he shows you, then choose nicely. Choose properly. Just like Krishna told everything to Arjuna, he says, now you do what you like. So it will be your choice, but you have to, first of all, chant with attention, not mechanically. And second of all, when you chant, things will become clear to you. When you chant and when you read with attention also, hearing with attention and chanting with attention, then things will be revealed to you. The truth will be revealed to you. But although the truth will be revealed to you, you still have to make a choice. You have to consistently choose Krishna. If you do that, if you hear and chant with attention, and you consistently choose Krishna, you'll make very nice advancement. Everything else will be taken care of. If you just do that, then everything else will happen. But you know, some specific things for grahasthas. That's why I say read Bhakti Loka. Or also... Oh, which list is it? I'm not sure if it's in chapter 13. There's another list also. It must be in 16. So there's a list in 13 of the process, chapter 13, Bhagavad Gita, the process of knowledge, and there's a list in chapter 16 of the divine qualities, and I can't remember which place, or maybe it's in both, where Prabhupada lists which of those particularly apply to the brahmacharyas, to the grahasthas, to the vanaprasthas, to the sannyasis, to the brahmanas. And you have Bhagavad Gita with you?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll look it up. I can see very quickly. Thank you.
Yes.
It's in one of those two places. Yes, it's in 16. Okay, in chapter 16, beginning, text 1 to 3, Krishna lists the divine qualities. And in the Prabhupada's purport, he specifically, I mean, all those qualities should be had by everybody, but he specifically says this quality is especially meant for the grahasthas, or this is especially meant for the kshatriyas. So I would suggest that you study that. Like this one. The next item is charity. Charity is meant for the householders. So, you know, the householders should earn a livelihood by an honorable means. Now, that's important, by an honorable means. The other day I met some devotee who's not earning their livelihood by an honorable means. And saying, well, if I give charity, right? Or if I'm giving the money to Krishna, it's okay. No, it's not okay. Prabhupada says you can't do something whimsical and offer the result to Krishna. I can't be in the organized crime and I'm earning money by murdering people and I'm giving the money to Krishna. Mm-hmm. It sounds funny, but that's really what this person's doing. They're earning their livelihood by making people sick and killing them. Correct or no? And then I'm going to give the money to Krishna. No. One has to earn one's livelihood by an honorable means and spend 50% to propagate Krishna consciousness. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to give 50% to somebody else. You can also use money to, you know, you use at least half of your income for the worship of your household deities or for, you know, something that's in worship of Krishna. You can have your own program. It's not that you have to give it all to somebody else. Thus, a householder should give in charity. Institutional societies are engaged in that way. Charity should be given to the right receiver. There are different kinds of charity, as will be explained later on. Charity in the modes of goodness, passion, ignorance. Charity in the mode of goodness is recommended by the scriptures, but charity in the mode of passion, ignorance, is not recommended. Prabhupada also, if you look at charity in the modes, charity in the mode of passion is also given at the request of a superior. In other words, you don't want to give it, but someone says you should give, and so you go, oh, okay. Or with regret, that afterwards you think, why have I spent that much money? You know, so you give to somebody and then you think, ooh, I really wish I hadn't given that much. That's also charity in the mode of passion. So mm-hmm. charity in the mode of goodness means has to come from your heart. Then the next one, as far as self-control is concerned, it is especially meant for the householder. Although he has a wife, a householder should not use his senses for sex life unnecessarily. There are restrictions for the householders even in sex life, which should be only engaged in for the propagation of children. If he does not require children, he should not enjoy sex with his wife. With his wife. Modern society enjoys sex life with contraceptive methods or more abominable methods to avoid the responsibility of children. This is not in the transcendental quality, but is demoniac. If anyone, even if he is a householder, wants to make progress in spiritual life, he must control his sex life and should not beget a child without the purpose of serving Krishna. If he is able to beget children who will be in Krishna consciousness, one can produce hundreds of children. Without this capacity, one should not indulge only for sense pleasure. So householders, minimum Prabhupada saying here, no contraception. So minimum standard for the household is no contraception. That also means no sex that is not sex. Do you understand what I'm talking about? If you don't, oh well, I'm not going to. No cheating. No cheating. So no chemical contraception, no physical contraception, and no sex that is not sex. Having sex that is not sex. Oh, now I'm following. So no contraception. At least, that's minimum. And the purpose I'm going to raise these children are Krishna conscious, and then one can have probably says hundreds of children. So there's no problem. Better to have 10 children than to use contraception or cheating. And the highest standard, of course, is one has sex once a month. And so that's the highest standard. But bottom line is no contraception. That's demoniac. So that's one thing for the householders. Then sacrifice is another item to be performed by the householders, because sacrifice requires a large amount of money. Performance of different types of sacrifices meant for the householders. They should perform Agnihotra sacrifices, but such sacrifices are very expensive. It's not possible for any householder to perform them. Best sacrifice is called Sankirtan Jagya. Most inexpensive sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So these three items, charity, sense control, performance, are meant for the householder. So in other words, in your home, you should be engaging in kirtan. And you, as householders, you should be organizing Sankirtan festivals. And here Prabhupada talks also about like Brahmins. Brahmins should be simple. If you're a Brahmin grahasta, ahimsa, he says, is for everybody. Truthfulness is for everybody. Checking anger is for everybody. Now here's another one. This is if you're a Vaishya grahasta. Here's if you're a Brahminical grahasta. If you're a Brahmin grahasta, then simplicity. And then he says here, whether you're brahmachari, grahasta, vanaprastha, sannyasta, one should be very simple and straightforward. If you're a kshatriya grahasta, then he says the word tejas is meant for the kshatriyas. The kshatriyas should always be very strong to be able to give protection for the weak. They should not pose themselves as being nonviolent. So if you're a kshatriya, then you have to give protection to people. Then if you're a vaishya, says socha means cleanliness, not only in mind and body, but in one's dealings. It's especially meant for mercantile people who should not deal in the black market. So if you're a Vaishya Grahasta, your dealing should be honest. Your dealing should be said, don't deal in the black market. Then not expecting honor applies to the Shudras. So if you're a Shudra Grahasta, then this means that you should just serve the higher classes without expecting any honor for yourself. Said they should not be puffed up with unnecessary prestige or honor and should remain in their own status. It is the duty of the Shudras to offer respect to the higher class for the upkeep of the social order. So you can refer to this also later for some good instruction. I think it's very important, this idea of making money honorably. That Prabhupada talks about in the... I was talking about this yesterday in Sarja also. Prabhupada talks about in Chaitanya Charitamrita that whatever we do to make a living, actually Krishna is the one maintaining us. And he says what we choose as an income is simply a matter of our personal choice. He said, so if, you know, he's talking about the hunter, Magrari, who was asked to stop hunting and said, well, if I don't hunt, how will I live? And he said that your income is coming from Krishna. If you're hunting, you're thinking hunting is the source of my income. He said, and if you're teaching, you're thinking teaching is the source of my income, but actually Krishna is the source of your income. So we should have enough faith that whatever income I'm going to get, I'm going to get. Either by my karma, my income is fixed, depending on how much charity I gave in a previous life, or if one's not operating under karma, one's income is coming from what Krishna feels is what's best for us. And whatever honorable job we do to get it, we will get the same income. You can say, well, wait a minute, if I live here, I'll get less money than if I live here. But your real income is not just your salary. Your real income has to do with your standard of living, not just with the gross amount of money you're bringing back. So suppose you live in a place where you make a lot of money, but you have 4 hours every day commuting. Husband and wife never see each other. So then actually you're not making a lot of money. You understand? You're getting a lot of money on one side and your happiness is going down on another. So this is our illusion. What we have is predestined. You're not going to change. You have a certain amount of happiness and distress, either by your karma or by Krishna. So do something that's honorable and best for your spiritual life. If you could let her sit down there, so maybe you could sit elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So she can sit on this. Okay? So there's a tendency in household life to be greedy, to to be greedy and to say, you know, I want more and more and more. And especially this is the tendency of women, because women are called street. They want to expand. So, you know, the husband gets his wife a nice house. She wants a nicer house. She wants nicer furniture. She wants another sari. She wants more jewelry. She wants, that's the tendency. The tendency of women is to expand. And that the woman is pushing the man, and the man is working hard basically to please his wife, frankly. So you have to be careful that you know, use your womanly nature to help, to encourage your husband to expand his spiritual life, not his material life. You know, not that you're pushing him that he's got to work 80 hours a week and 4 hours in commute and he has no time to chant Hare Krishna and you never even see him. If you have children, that you know, he leaves before they wake up and he comes back after they go to sleep. So what is the use of a big bank balance? And then people are thinking, well, I'll sacrifice everything now, even my spiritual life, and I'll save up my money, and then I'll go to India, and then I'll chant Hare Krishna. First of all, you don't know if you'll live that long.
Yeah.
Second of all, then when you do that, there'll be something else. You know, if we're saying, I'm not going to become spiritually serious because I have this situation, then believe me, there'll be another situation, and another, and another, and another. You'll never find the perfect situation. So put Krishna first. Have enough faith to put Krishna first. That takes some faith. Live in a way that's conducive to putting Krishna first, and trust that what you're going to get, you're going to get. You're not going to, Krishna's not going to cheat you. If you put him first, he's not going to cheat you. You don't have to live a crazy life just to get money. Whatever money you're going to get, you're going to get. Or whatever happiness you're going to get, you're going to get. You may get less money or more money, but your amount of happiness will not change. Is that all right?
Yes.
Anything else specifically about household life you want to know? Did that answer your question? Something else? Anybody want to discuss?
No, I'm into Krishna consciousness. And I agree with whatever you say, and I follow it also. But for the younger generation, maybe I'm voicing for them. Like, I don't know how to put it, you know. You had mentioned about when they're newly married. And I'm married for 11 years, I have two kids. But the ones who are newly married, how do they get into Krishna consciousness? They're newly married, and they are not at all Krishna conscious, suppose.
What is the difference between not at all Krishna conscious when you're newly married or not at all Krishna conscious when you're married 11 years?
No, I am Krishna conscious.
But
so
I'm saying,
I know about how
but
to
what
go.
Is, I don't understand, what is
the person who is not at all Krishna conscious.
Okay.
And they're newly married, newly wed couples, couple
okay.
new place.
Okay.
Their outlook is totally different.
How do they get into Krishna consciousness?
If somebody's not a devotee, why does it matter if they're newly married or not newly
yeah.
married?
That is not the thing.
I'm asking. No, maybe there's a difference.
Yeah.
Maybe it may. So I'm asking you, what is the difference?
No, when they're not devotees. How do you?
I understand
your
that.
Marriage life.
I understand.
Life.
I understand
I
that they're not devotees. No, don't be shy. We're all ladies. You asking about sex?
How about?
Are you asking about sex?
Yeah.
All right, then ask that.
Okay.
Then ask that. Okay. Yes, ladies are very shy. You
so
say
how do
to
they,
ask that.
Yeah,
that is our good
they,
quality. But if you don't ask among the ladies, how will you know?
No, but how do they?
How do we preach to them?
Yes.
Have children.
Yeah.
It's difficult to have children?
Not exactly. Because
when people are first married, so lust is very strong. So that's because when you're first married, you're supposed to have children. That is the way. Now, I mean, why would we even think to ask this question? 100 years ago, there was no asking this question because there was not birth control. So nobody even asked this question. Everybody understood, you get married, there's going to be children. And probably soon. Because when people are first married, the attraction is very strong. That's when it's the most strong. So everybody expects, used to be, 100 years ago, not even 100 years ago, 60, 70 years ago, people expected that the lady will have a child after 1 year of marriage. That was expected. And if she didn't, there was something wrong.
Taboo in society, right?
Exactly. Exactly. It was expected that within the first few months of marriage, the woman will get pregnant. It was expected. And not only expected, but it was glorious. People like children.
No, but in today's world, there are so much birth control and all these things. So it becomes more difficult to preach to them, to make them understand certain things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So then the question is, how can people see that children are a blessing? I mean, even, frankly, even in the Hare Krishna movement, our attitude on this subject is very damaging to people. When we hear somebody has a lot of children, we become horrified. Even devotees. You know, when you hear some devotee has more than 3 children, they have so many children. Prabhupada had 5 children. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had 10 children. Gaura Govinda Maharaj had 7 children. Prabhupada writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, said every woman wants at least 6 children. Now maybe we don't feel that way, but that means that's our bad training. By nature, that's the way women are by nature. So, but now we've been trained by modern society. Have your career first, marry late. Women's greatest fertility is between 18 and 20. And statistically, there are 3 things you can do to cut down your risk of breast cancer. First thing is have your first baby before you're 20.
Yeah.
The younger you are, the better. But best is first baby before 20. Makes a big difference statistically. Next thing is to have several children, at least 2 or 3 or more. Next thing is to spend at least 7 years of your life breastfeeding.
7 years.
So I found that out later. I think I spent 6.5. I had my first baby when I was 19, and I had 3 kids, and I lost 1 baby. And I spent 6.5 years breastfeeding, so my mother had breast cancer, so I'm a little nervous. But they say those 3 things. That means a natural life. So you can't just tell people children are a blessing. The reason that children used to be seen as a blessing is they were a blessing, because people lived the kind of life where the children were contributing to the family from a young age. So now, if the husband's going to work and the wife's going to work, the children are a burden. They're not a blessing anymore. Mm-hmm. People are thinking for each child, they have to spend so much money. But if you raise the children properly, they will contribute. Not that you engage in child labor and you send them out to work. But they should be helping. Prabhupada said the children should do whatever the parents are doing. So to preach to people, you have to look at a whole different lifestyle. If you tell people live in modern life and have 10 children, don't use contraception and have 10 children, they'll be horrified. How will I maintain 10 children in Dubai? And it's sort of interesting because my husband and I discovered this sort of without planning to discover it. But he always wanted his own business. That was just his nature. He wanted his own business. So it's a long story, but he ended up having his own business. And he ran the business from our house. And then we also started a school, and most of the time the school was in our house. It was 1 year, 2 years. 2 years the school was out of our house. But other than that, the school was actually in our own home. So that means for many, many years, both my husband and I were working from the home. We had a home business. Now, when you have a home business, it's very natural that the children will help. So from the time our children were 4 years old, they were helping. You have to, you know, things need to get done, and they want to help, and they want to feel grown up, and they help. So all of our children were a great blessing for us, even in a practical sense. And by the time they were 12 years old, they all 3 of them know how to be managers, because both my husband and each of us were running a business. Both our sons know how to do accounting. They all know how to teach. They would all help me. They're all expert teachers. And my husband was a software engineer. So the boys especially, that by the time they were, 13, 14, they knew more about programming than people now who come out of college with a degree in computer science. And it made our family very close. I mean, even now, my children are my best friends. So it really helped our family become close. And I think it really had something to do with the fact that all my children are devotees. Because they really felt that they were part of something. They felt very valued. And I started researching about how other religious societies that are very different from the world raise their children. And I concluded that including the children in the work of the adults, which is what Prabhupada told us over and over and over again, was one of the key factors. So, I mean, I would have been happy to have had 10 children. My health is not so good, but I would have been happy to have had 10 children. I mean, I don't think physically I could have done it. But I'm so happy with the children that I have and how they contributed. I wouldn't at all mind having 10 children. So I think people have to, you know, it's an all-around education. You can't just take one piece of Krishna consciousness, except for maybe chanting Hare Krishna, but you can't just take one piece and plug it in. You can't say, now stop drinking, you know, stop taking intoxication, but still hang out with all your old friends. That's not going to work. You know, even just becoming a vegetarian may be difficult if you're still associating with all the old people. You have to change your lifestyle.
Actually, I didn't find that. The day I stopped drinking and eating meat, turned vegetarian, I still had the old friends.
That's not true for everybody.
It's just, I think, how confident you are of your beliefs.
That's not true for everybody. Some people find it very difficult. I was talking with one gentleman in London who said it took him a year and a half to give up intoxication and eating because of his old friends.
Well, one of my friends, she told, they used to have parties, playing cards, and once they stopped, automatically all the friends
left.
Totally.
So, I mean, you know, different people have different experiences.
You don't feel like associated with them anymore.
That often happens also.
Yeah, usually, you know, you feel okay.
Well, but it may be, I was talking to these teenage girls in Bahrain, and they were struggling with this in school. They said, our friends don't want to be with us anymore because we don't want to do what they're doing.
Yeah.
And one of the girls said, well, I'm also losing interest in these things, but I don't want to lose my friends.
Yeah.
So there may be some period of difficulty. I mean, if you had an easy time, you're very fortunate.
Yeah, even my husband doesn't drink, and we still go out with people who drink. Obviously, I mean, we don't enjoy when we go to clubs. So we don't go to clubs, but we do meet them, you know, in other areas, like
right.
for dinner, etc. There's so many things you can do.
That's
nice. It just depends on how true your friendship is.
And it's also true. I mean, what I discovered was that a lot of my friends weren't really my friends.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Then you choose to leave them.
You know, who is your real friend?
You start to discover, and unfortunately, many of them were not really my friends. So that was. But my point is that, you know, sometimes just one piece may require other pieces.
I have a question.
But is that all right? Or you're still not satisfied with that?
No. See, the point was like, you know, I fully agree with what is Krishna consciousness and we follow it and it's fine. I voiced for the people who are newly married and how do they take up the Krishna consciousness.
They have children.
They don't have.
That's what you instruct them. You want to know how do you instruct
how
them.
How to
what you instruct
yeah.
them
yeah.
is have children.
Is, okay.
Okay? That's how you instruct them. Say, have children. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that of the causes for procreation, he is Kandarpa.
Mm-hmm.
He is sex, he is the desire. He says he's religious sex, and he says he's the act of religious sex. And he says he's the desire also. Interesting, isn't it? So the desire of a husband and wife for each other, if they're going to produce children to raise as devotees, is Krishna. The act is Krishna and the desire is Krishna. It's actually Krishna. It's transcendental. One can experience spiritual ecstasy.
What if, if the husband is not Krishna conscious and the wife is very difficult?
I'm sure, or other way also.
That's actually
either, whether it's the husband who's Krishna conscious and not the wife, or the wife who's Krishna conscious and not the husband. The difficulty is a little different, obviously, for obvious reasons. But, you know, I think obvious why, which one who is Krishna conscious makes some difference. But if the woman's not Krishna conscious, it can be very painful for her also. You know, if the husband says, okay, I'm not having anything to do with you anymore, and that's not her mentality, it may be very difficult for her. You know, she's not, she can't force something on the husband, but she may be feeling neglected and unloved or frustrated. So what to do? So at least we have to say, again, no contraception. The woman should say to her husband, you know, I'd be happy to satisfy you, but no contraception. That she has a duty to do. That's her duty. I'm not saying that's easy.
Yes, it's not easy.
It's
See, some things we cannot discuss openly because, you know, we
that's
can't
why,
talk about it.
That's why we have a ladies' meeting.
Yeah, that is why. And
that's why we have a ladies'
meeting.
By
me asking a question.
Yes, and there was some talk of canceling the meeting today for something. I said, no, we have to have. Because every time there's a ladies' meeting, what topic do you think comes up? Because who are you going to discuss this with, the sannyasis?
So it's better, like me, I'm voicing, but if I answer many people's questions.
My dear friend, I travel all over the world, and I am asked this question over and over and over again.
Hmm.
Not only by ladies, but by grihastha couples also. I often meet with couples, and the same question comes up. Now, if one partner is more Krishna conscious than the other, it's going to be a problem. If the woman says to her husband, no contraception, he's not a devotee, or the husband says to his wife, no contraception, and she's not a devotee, that will be also difficult. Don't think it's just difficult going one way. If a man says to his wife, you know, no more birth control, and she says, well, wait a minute, I don't want any more children. I'm the one who has to carry the child. I don't want any more children. That will be similarly difficult. And the husband may say, oh, I don't want to maintain any more children, or any children. I'm not saying it's easy. And you know, maybe the couple needs to come and talk to somebody. So I talked to people on this point. I wrote an article on Back to Godhead, What's Wrong with Birth Control? So that's the bottom line. Prabhupada explains that's, you know, top standard is once a month only, once the woman's pregnant, no sex, until the child's 6 months old. That's the highest standard. That's best. But that has to be done through advancement in Krishna consciousness, not artificial. And there are many people who can do that, and that's very helpful for Krishna consciousness. But just like with prasada, best standard is you cook, or you eat only things that are cooked by devotees, and you offer them to the deities at regulator times. But if you're going to a restaurant and you're offering that food to Krishna, then that's something. That's bottom line. At least you're offering it to Krishna. So sex has to be offered to Krishna. It's just like food. You have to offer it to Krishna. So to offer food to Krishna, bottom line is it has to be vegetarians and no onions or garlic, right? That's bottom line. That's not the best standard, that's the minimum standard. So minimum standard to offer sex to Krishna, you have to be married. I don't think that's much of an issue among the Indians here. Although in the younger generation, that's starting to be an issue. Please, you know, I have some elder Indians who say, no, 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 our children don't do that. I say, please wake up. So... You know, first thing to be offered, you have to be married. And second thing, that you have to at least be welcoming a child. You can't be locking the door for children. You have to be at least welcoming a child. With each act, you have to be thinking, I hope the Lord sends a nice child. I hope the Lord sends a nice child. You cannot do anything that will intentionally prevent pregnancy. Whether, as I say, it's a chemical you're eating, whether it's some device that you're using, or whether it's an act which prevents pregnancy, which is what I call sex without sex. There's about three or four of them at least I can think of. So even in, among devotees, people do that, and then they think, oh, I'm very strict. Especially they'll do sex without sex and think, oh, I'm very strict, I'm not having real sex. That's what Bill Clinton said. You know. He said, I wasn't really having sex. Okay. So that's, you know, Krishna's not so foolish. So if you're doing that, better to just actually have sex and welcome a child. Be honest.
Yeah.
To tell people, lead an honest, natural life. And to do that, you have to have some trust. You have to have some trust that your happiness and suffering is already destined.
it's already destined. Whatever you're going to suffer by having more children, you're going to suffer anyway in another way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're avoiding children by being sinful, then you're going to have to suffer for being sinful too.
Mm-hmm.
You'll suffer double. You'll suffer whatever you would have suffered by having the children.
Mm-hmm.
Having children includes some suffering, right, mommies? Doesn't it? Isn't there some suffering with children?
Mm-hmm.
No, none? None at all?
I don't.
No suffering?
No suffering.
Okay. Do you agree there's some suffering with having children?
It's suffering, you think, God.
No suffering. No suffering. I don't know. Your life must be very different from mine.
But that time you feel suffering.
I don't know. I think that changing stooly nappies and cleaning up vomit and dealing with screaming. I don't know, but I disagree with you. Dealing with screaming children in public and worrying about how your children are going to do in school. And dealing with their... Oh, but it's suffering, be honest.
Oh, you take it as suffering.
There's some kind of a cloud. I don't know.
That's how you can see.
Getting old is also part of life, but it's suffering, my friend. Oh my.
Yeah, according to Bhagavad Gita,
it's suffering.
Yeah, what is it?
It is suffering.
It
is definitely. If it is not suffering, then why are people using birth control?
Yeah.
Hello?
If there's no suffering,
why is this question even being discussed?
That is it.
Obviously there's suffering. Yes, there's suffering. There's also great happiness, you know. But there's also suffering.
Definitely.
Okay, thank you. I'm thinking maybe I'm crazy or something. You know, when you're worrying about getting your children married, I think that's the greatest stuff. And then even then, so my children are all grown up now, and my daughter-in-law just was talking to me yesterday from the States, and 3-4 days ago she broke her foot. And so she's on crutches, and she can't walk very much or stand very much, and you know. I'm so suffering from anxiety. Okay, I'm thousands of miles away, and I'm suffering from anxiety. So many people in the world right now have a broken foot, but because she's my daughter-in-law, I'm suffering. You follow? And I'm thinking maybe I'm going to have to change my plans and go there to help her out for a month. Because they're supposed to move to a new house in 10 days. How will she move to a new house in 10 days when she can't even walk? So even now it's suffering. A few years ago, my daughter was hit by a truck. So that was suffering. I was also suffering. Not only that she was suffering, I was suffering. I was in so much anxiety. Is she going to be paralyzed? Is she this and that? I stayed with her in the hospital for 5 days and I stayed in her house for a week. I had to take care of her like she was a baby. So yes, it's suffering. There's pleasure there also, obviously. As I said, I wouldn't mind having, if I had 10 children. I'm very happy I had children. But you should tell people whatever you're going to suffer, you're going to suffer. It's not that if you don't have children, the people without children are not having any suffering. And if you're avoiding children by being sinful, you'll suffer double.
Mm.
You'll suffer for the sin, and you'll suffer what you were destined to suffer. So live a life of dharma and trust. And how many children you have, that's not in your hands. That's not in your hands. You may have no children. Krishna may not send. You may have one. We know many people, they're married 10, 20 years. They have one child. Right? It's not in our hands. It's not that, well, if we don't use contraception, everybody will have 20 children. No. Average will be 6. So some people will have 20. Some people. My great-grandmother had 21 children. 18 lived. You know, some people will have 1, some people will have none. So this is how you can preach to people. Yes?
I have a personal question.
Yes.
In my personal life, I mean, everything is very good. My husband is very controlled. no problems with this whole thing that we're talking about. But the thing is that I'm trying to be Krishna consciousness. I was a lot more before I got married, and my husband isn't. And the whole atmosphere, I mean, it's a very, very nice, very pious household, but there's no Krishna there. As in, you know, we have a whole temple, etc., with our deities, but there's you know, that whole thing that you get with association and that progress. I haven't felt that.
Mm.
And, I mean, there's my husband, I mean, he's not fond of meat, but he eats chicken, only chicken breast, so that he can build muscle.
I see.
A lot of the people in my family are vegetarian, but a certain amount of non-vegetarian food is cooked. And sometimes I have to cook it, because like the way I cook it. That makes me to suffer. But no, that's a problem I'm facing, because then I don't feel like offering food to Krishna. I don't feel like doing anything, because I know, you know, this whole place is contaminated, and, you know, I just don't feel like...
Mm.
So I don't know what I can do to... you know, progress, and maybe to help my family progress spiritually. I know I chanted a lot more when I was in good association, and being a lazy person, I don't do that so much anymore, just because I don't have that push. You know, I need to be pushed.
All of us. So, when I was working on my PhD, I read that 50% of people who go for a PhD never finish. And you were asking me today, why do people get initiated and then they don't follow? So that scared me. It said that people who get medical degrees and legal degrees, they generally finish, but PhDs don't, and because of the thesis. So the author was explaining that what happens is when you're going to classes, you go at a set time and everybody else is going. There's so many students, the professor's there, and there's some push to get your work done. There's things that are due at a certain time, but with the thesis, it's not like that at all. Now, some universities are different, but generally, in most fields, with the thesis, you're completely on your own. Completely. So the professor never calls you and says, how's it going? You have to initiate everything. You have to make the appointment. You have to email. You have to call. They'll help you if you ask them, but you're on your own. And that for most people, they just don't have the discipline to do it. So they suggested that you form your own support group. So when the classes were going on, we did have a group that met, and then in the summer, there's no classes. So I actually contacted other students. They weren't even in my field. I didn't even know them. So I was in education. One of them was in English, and one of them was in nursing. And the three of us would meet every Tuesday, I think from 10 to 11. And the only thing we did was talk about what we had done. We would each bring our work. What did I do this last week? So you were ashamed to come and say, I've done nothing. You wanted to come and say, I've done something. And my point is that because we wanted to finish, we set up a way to pressure ourselves. That's my point. We created it. We created a way to pressure ourselves. And it worked. I mean, I was very fortunate. That lasted for the summer. Then for my internship, one of the women that I was working with was also in the PhD program, but she was at a lower stage than I was. So when she was very interested in what I was doing because it would help her when she got to that point. So when I was saying, I'm doing this, she wanted to hear. You know, my family got tired of it after a little while. My family, my friends, you don't want to burden all your family and friends with, oh, I did this research and I called this place and they didn't return my call and this isn't working and this worked and this happened. You know, nobody wanted to hear all the details. Kind of like if you have a disease and people get tired of hearing the details of the disease after a while or whatever it is. But she was eager to hear. And therefore I felt some encouragement.
But she's interested.
She was interested for herself.
Yeah.
Because when I was telling her what I went through, she could plan her own studies. And when I left, I said to her, you know, make sure that you do what I did and you get a group that you're working with. So create a group. And if you can't create a group physically, you have it on the internet.
There's now live morning programs broadcast from North Carolina, Alachua, Florida, Los Angeles, I think Mayapur, I think Chaupiti. One devotee does in London from his home. So, of course, they're all different times. But I found that listening to a program broadcast live over the internet was almost like being there. That if I did it regularly, I started psychologically connecting with that community. Especially the classes, I would tune into the classes. You can even turn into the kirtans. Some of them have webcams. You can see the deities in the temple room and listen to the kirtans. And you can set up a community like that. I have a lot of devotees that I correspond with by email and by chat. Now, you have a problem in this country, you can't get Skype. The government blocks it. Unbelievable. Yeah. I needed to add more. Parts of it are free, but I needed to add more money to my phone thing. I couldn't do it from here. I got this notice, you know. This is against the cultural and moral standards of the UAE.
What?
When we went to Bahrain, then I could do it. They let me do it from there. So I guess you have to fly to Bahrain periodically.
But if you have mail in Gmail, you can talk for your call through internet.
Oh, okay. There you
Google
go.
Talk. Google
yeah.
Talk. Is
Google
good.
Talk you can
yeah.
do. I couldn't do it with my AIM either. My AIM chat is completely disabled here.
Oh, okay.
Doesn't work at all. That's to America Online. I can't even sign on to it. Skype I can use, but I can't add money to it. So I can use the free. If you sign up in another country, you can use it here. And anyway, I chat with a lot of devotees. I email a lot of people. And that makes a big difference for me. Sometimes I just meditate on devotees. I have some devotees that I really like who are very inspiring to me. Sometimes I just think about them. I met one lady in Hungary. She doesn't have a computer. Her English is poor. And she's such a wonderful devotee. I just sit and think about her. I just think about how I sat and had bhajans with her and how we were chanting together and what we talked about Krishna. And that inspires me. And you can meditate on your devotees, you know, meditate on Prabhupada. They're actually, you can access Srila Prabhupada, you can access Bhaktivinoda Thakur. If you think about them, you will have their guidance. So it's sort of, you know, if you want to become, it's a circle. If I have a desire, then I'll put myself in situations that will increase that desire. By being in those situations, my desire will increase, then I will put myself in better situations, then my desire will increase, then I will put myself in better situations. But ultimately, it does come down to us. You know, one of the most important things is hearing. If you really want to, it sounds to me like the main thing, this is for everybody, is we need to increase our desire. Actually, as soon as we really want to love Krishna, we will. That's all. It's all desire, 100% desire. Because Krishna already wants it. We don't have to talk him into it. He wants it, Prabhupada says, 10 times more than we do. He wants to regain that loving relationship with us. He's totally madly in love with us. You know, like sometimes a woman has a man so much in love with her, always knocking on her door, text messaging her, you know, please come see me. So that's what Krishna is doing, actually. He's begging us all the time, please, please, please. So as soon as we want it, he's ready. So our whole problem is we don't want it. Badly enough, anyway. I wanted a little bit. So everything we're doing, reading the scriptures, chanting Hare Krishna, offering our food, all of that is meant to increase our desire. And one of the main ways is hearing. So we're very lucky. One of the benefits of Kali Yuga is that you don't need to be personally with somebody. There's Prabhupada's lectures and conversations have been recorded. Prabhupada dictating Krishna book has been recorded. I was listening to that this morning. Also, there's so many classes and seminars of other devotees that have been recorded. There's devotees who've recorded reading Prabhupada's books. So even if you don't have enough time to read, you can listen to the whole Krishna book, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bhagavatam. You can listen on a CD. So while you're cooking, while you're ironing, while you're cleaning, while you're driving, you can be hearing. And if you're hearing, you will increase your desire. And the funny thing is that when you increase your desire, you'll find a way to do it. If there's something that we really want to do, we will find a way to do it, regardless of circumstances. There are devotees who've been Krishna conscious in prisons. There's a new book, if you want to read a really inspiring book, it's called Salted Bread. I had the honor of editing it, it's just been produced, about the devotees who were imprisoned in the former Soviet Union for distributing books and chanting Hare Krishna. They were chanting 16 rounds in prison. And if they were caught, they were beaten. And they were still chanting 16 rounds in prison. And they couldn't have beads. They had to make beads out of bread, which was a long, complicated process. And the guards would take their bread beads, and then they'd make some more. To be a vegetarian, they had to eat only bread and salt. And they got severe vitamin deficiencies. Their teeth fell out. And still, they were following.
At the last visit, Kaunte Das Prabhu was here. He was talking about prison preaching. Many jailers found in India that after they got Krishna consciousness, jail, these people are behaving nicely. So they are calling devotees to come and preach it again and again. So they have seen the behavioral change in the prisoners.
Even recently, I got a message from His Holiness Radha Govind Maharaj. He did nice kirtan in Agra. Agra jail is very famous. And all jailer and prison were dancing together.
But I'm talking about people who were already devotees. They were not criminals.
Okay.
They were already devotees. They were put in jail for selling books.
Russia.
In Russia. Just like now, if you go to Saudi Arabia and you're selling books, you'll be put in jail. So you're not a criminal. You're not a criminal, right?
No, we are not criminals.
Okay. So, but if Revati Gopi goes to Saudi Arabia and she's selling books, she'll be put in jail.
Yeah.
So it was like that. Okay?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You read, and still they were Krishna. So that means it's a question of desire. If they could be Krishna conscious in that circumstance, so you're living with a husband who eats chicken, they were living with criminals, actual criminals. Not just a chicken-eating husband, but actual criminals. And they were living with rats. So we're saying, you know, I have some problem from my relative, but whatever problem you have from your relative, there's nothing compared to that. Living with rats and actual murderers. You're living in the same room with murderers and rats. And if you're caught chanting, the guards will beat you, actually beat you with a stick. Right now, if you chant, nobody will beat you, I hope. Nobody will shake your beads away. And still, they were offering all their food. They taught the other prisoners how to offer their food. They were preaching in the prison, which was completely illegal. If they got caught, they were beaten. Sometimes all the prisoners were having kirtans. They were smuggling in pitchers, which was illegal. Again, if they were caught, they were beaten. And I mean beaten. I don't mean they were just like hit a little bit. The devotee wrote this book, he has permanent damage. He's lost almost all the eyesight in one eye. He has permanent spinal damage from being beaten. So beaten, starved, mistreated. They would put them in psychological hospitals where they were injecting them with different drugs. And still, they were chanting, they chanted their 16 rounds every day, and they were offering their food. So that means it's a question of desire. So you want to do something to increase your desire.
What do you do to increase your desire?
Hear and associate with devotees. If you can't do it personally, do it over the internet, do it somehow or other. And hear. And if we hear, just like you all don't think it's suffering changing stooly nappies. It's very strange. So, you know, by hearing, we come to see that this material world is suffering. We don't think it's so nice here anymore. And by hearing, we come to see that the spiritual world is very nice. And then we say, I don't want to be here, I want to go there. Then our desire increases. But if I'm thinking, no, I'm not suffering, it's just part of life, then why should we want to leave? No, it's not suffering. I'm not suffering. My child has just vomited all over my bed at 2 in the morning, but I'm not suffering. I'm sorry, I don't relate to that. It's suffering. When you do it for Krishna, it's not suffering, but materially it's suffering. I don't like getting up at 2 in the morning to a bed full of vomit. I mean, that's not, you know, what do you want to do today? Well, I want to clean up a vomit bed at 2 in the morning. It's miserable. So one should see this life is miserable. For this much pleasure, I'm suffering this much.
And we say, why do I want to stay here? And we hear how wonderful Krishna is. We think, wow, you know, that sounds like fun. I'd like to go dance with Krishna. I'd like to sing with Krishna. I'd like to play with Krishna. I'd like to regain my spiritual body. You know, and now you're young and beautiful. After a while, you look like me.
You're so beautiful.
I look in the mirror as my mother's face looks back at me. And after a while, you know, my mother at the end, when my mother was 15, she was a beauty queen. When she was at the end, she looked like a skeleton. So all the things we have in this world, our beauty, our health, our wealth, it's not going to last. Even if you think, well, I'm enjoying it, it's life. You're not going to keep it. So why not be in a place where you can keep it? Regain your spiritual body, which is eternally beautiful, more beautiful. You take all the sunrises in the world and all the mountaintops. And we're much more beautiful than any of us. We're powerful, we're intelligent, we're eternal. So you hear this, you think, yeah, I'd like to get that. Why do I want to have this? And you think, okay, all right, well, let me see if there's some way I can stop cooking meat for my family. Because then you'll want to. If a person wants to make money, then they're willing to take so much trouble, commute 4 hours a day. Someone who doesn't care about money, are they going to drive 4 hours a day to make money? Never. I worked so hard for my degree. I worked really hard. It was a lot of austerity. So if you want something, you'll sacrifice for it. If I just say to you, you should sacrifice, you have to want it. So if I say, no, you shouldn't cook meat, you're getting some of the karma by doing that.
Yeah.
But you have to want it. And if you want it, then you can say things like, look, I love you, but sorry, no birth control. Or, you know, look, I love you, but I'm not going to cook meat for you anymore. And you're willing to do that, and you're willing to pay a price. There's going to be a price. It's not going to be free. There's going to be a price. Everything has its price. So suppose you're not Krishna conscious, then what's the price? There's a pretty big price.
You can lose your husband.
Well, you're going to lose everything. You're going to lose everything. That's definite. Absolutely 100% definite. That you're going to lose everything. Isn't it? Do we get to keep anything? Do we get to keep anything? So if we're not Krishna conscious, what do we lose? Everything. Everything. Next life, you know, I'm not going to keep my education next life. I won't even be able to talk. You can take your money with you. It's a nice house. You can take this with you. You lose everything. Absolutely guaranteed. And you don't even know when. I met one devotee yesterday. He has a 9-year-old daughter. And he said a couple years ago his wife died. She must not have been very old. She died of a heart attack. So you don't know when. Definite. We will lose our husband, our children, our parents, our home, our wealth, our education, our beauty. Everything will be gone. So what is the price for being a material consciousness? It's a pretty heavy price. And then even while we have it, is it pure bliss? Anybody, you have like a whole month where you were only happy? We're lucky if we have a whole day where we're only happy. What to speak of a week or a month? And does our happiness always get better and better and better and better and better? It gets boring. And is it unlimitedly happy? So having nice clothes, good food, does that make us unlimitedly happy? No. It's limited. And it gets boring. So you get some nice new clothes and you wear it once and you're happy, and after you've worn it 10 times, it's boring. It doesn't give you the same kick. So that's the price for not being Krishna conscious. We're in a place that's boring, where things give us some pleasure, some limited pleasure, and then they become boring.
everything's going to end. We just don't know when and how. So we're constantly in fear. Constantly in fear. We get used to being in fear. Just like there's some noise of the cars going past, but none of us have been hearing it. We're hearing it, but we're not noticing it. So we're also always in a state of fear. We just don't notice it. Constantly in a state of fear. Just like my daughter-in-law broke her foot. She was just walking. It was nighttime. She didn't see some break in the pavement, and she tripped and broke her foot. And that can happen to any of us, right? And we know that. So every time we're walking, we're in fear. Every time we get in the car. We all know somebody who got in a car accident and they became paralyzed, or they lost their memory, or they became disfigured. Don't we all know of somebody like this? At least we've read of. So every time we get in the car, we're in fear. Again, it's below the level of conscious awareness, but it's affecting us. And therefore, how can you be happy when you're in fear? Is it possible to be happy when you're in anxiety? Those are opposite, aren't they? Happiness and anxiety. Krishna says, without peace, you can't be. So in this world, as long as we're trying to enjoy this world, our anxiety is constant. When am I going to get sick? When am I going to get hurt? When am I going to die? When are all the people I love going to get sick and hurt and die? How will I be able to keep my money? Suppose I get fired from my job. Suppose the government asks me to leave. Suppose there's a war. Suppose my friend doesn't like me anymore. I mean, the list of anxieties goes on. So that's the price. Pretty high price. And there's also a price for becoming Krishna conscious. That price is you have to become detached from all your suffering. You have to become detached from this world, which is a source of pain and misery and anxiety. But we're like the alcoholic. The drinks are making us sick, and still we don't want to give them up. We think they're our happiness. That's the problem. So therefore we feel that being Krishna conscious is a big price. So if somebody's never drunk alcohol, giving up alcohol is not a big price. It's nothing. You know, most of us, we're not waking up in the morning thinking, oh, I wish I had a cigarette. We don't even think about it. But when someone becomes addicted to these things, then giving it up is very painful. So we become addicted to material life. And therefore we think that giving up our attachments is very painful. It's not actually. But we're perceiving it like that because of our attachments. So yeah, then it becomes that there's some price. If you tell the alcoholic, oh, you can get sober with no price, you're cheating them. An alcoholic has to go through some austerity to become sober. If you've never been an alcoholic, it's not an austerity to be sober. But once you become an alcoholic, you have to have some austerity. So there will be some austerity. And therefore you have to want it badly enough to pay the price. So that means hearing two things: how wonderful Krishna is and how lousy this place is. Those two things we have to keep. Not exactly that the place is lousy, but our desire to enjoy is what's lousy. If you're here just to serve Krishna, there's no suffering. You won't perceive it as suffering. You'll perceive it differently. So we have to keep hearing, hearing, hearing. You say, well, I have to have a desire to hear. Yeah. It's true. You know what? But it can build on itself. You can have this much desire to hear, then you hear. By hearing, your desire will increase. And then you'll have more desire. Then you'll find more ways of enlivening yourself. And it will build on itself. And you have to be careful about hearing nonsense. Because if you're hearing materialistic things, that will decrease your desire. You know, if you're watching television, movies, reading ordinary books, they will tell you the material world's a very nice place. It's fun, it's exciting, it's full of romance, it's full of adventure. All these people on the television, they have happy lives without God. And then you'll lose your desire. Then you'll want to stay here. And you'll think, well, it's just part of life. We are meant to have unlimited, ever-increasing enjoyment that is so intense that we can hardly contain our joy. That's our natural state.
not some little pleasure from a little piece of tasty food or a new sari or something. That